Caitlin Bernard, sanctioned by the state medical board. Indiana kids likely to interact with DCS, plus Eric Doden's plan for Indianapolis, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review, for the week ending May 26th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Caitlin Bernard, described as a good doctor Thursday by the head of the Indiana Medical Licensing Board, was found to have violated state and federal patient privacy laws. Bernard received a letter of reprimand and a fine for charges related to abortion care she provided last year to a 10-year-old rape victim from Ohio. Attorney General spokesperson Kelly Stevenson declared victory for patient privacy.
It's not right, and the facts were presented today made that very clear.
Bernard and her attorneys didn't speak to reporters after the licensing board's 14-hour-long hearing, but Dr. Tracy Wilkinson, a colleague of Bernard's who sat through the hearing, said the board's decision sends a message to all physicians.
That political persecution can be happening to you next for providing health care to your patients.
Bernard was cleared of charges that she failed to report child abuse and is unfit to practice. She can appeal the board's decision. What does this decision mean for physicians in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Chris Mitchum. Caitlin Lang, senior investigative reporter at State Affairs Indiana. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, what message does this decision send?
Well, I guess after months of persecution and defaming Dr. Bernard by name, she was completely cleared of the charges that he originally brought, that she failed to report, and her failure to report put that child in jeopardy by putting her back in the home. It was unanimously affirmed by this board that he was wrong about that. But in the course of doing that, and by the way, you know, they talk about a HIPAA violation. The child's name and the mother's name have never been made public. And there's never been a charge by the mother that the privacy of the family has been violated. Point taken. But in addition to that now, to give Todd Rokita, who has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this and enjoyed all kinds of media attention as a result of his defamation of Dr. Bernard, to give him a fig leaf, which is all this is a fig leaf, they have interpreted HIPAA way more broadly than I think it was supposed to be interpreted. And the result of that is that any physician talking with any other physician about a client could be in danger of the same kind of persecution that Rokita has done against Dr. Bernard. I mean, they don't want you discussing the fact that 10-year-olds get raped and get pregnant and need abortions. They don't want that discussion. They want to deny it ever happens, which is what he and the Attorney General from Ohio did at the beginning of this case. They don't want a meaningful discussion about the fact that their draconian laws are having a negative health effect on women and girls. They don't want that discussion. They want to say their right to life and abortion is wrong under any circumstance, and that's Todd Rokita. But he has wasted taxpayer money. He has put... You know, he has jeopardized the ability of physicians to discuss with one another the right treatment for patients because of this broad interpretation of HIPAA. And it's a disgrace. He ought to be disciplined by the Supreme Court.
I will just note that your daughter Kathleen...
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to disclose that. My daughter Kathleen also represents Dr. Bernard.
She just talked about this being a fig leaf, the part of the decision that sanctioned Dr. Bernard being a fig leaf for Todd Rokita. Is this in many ways a split decision in terms of Dr. Bernard gets to continue practicing medicine in Indiana without any restrictions, but Todd Rokita gets to say, look, I won something?
Yeah, I would say a lot of credit needs to go to the board that held this hearing, not only because it required 13 hours of attention and a lot of different information to process and come up with this decision, but also they did a really good job of, I feel like, wading through, for lack of a better term, a lot of the things that didn't really matter. I know at the beginning of it they were talking about whether a certain tattoo that Dr. Bernard might have is relevant, or the name of the doctor that she talked to in Ohio might be relevant. I think they did a good job of trying to keep it focused on, okay, what are we actually talking about when it comes to her violating privacy, whether that be federal or state laws.
Or child abuse. Remember, his first charge,
right,
against her was
which they threw out
unanimously.
In like 30 seconds. Yeah,
in the deliberations, they talked a long time about what constitutes a HIPAA violation, how much information can you share. They spent a lot of time really debating amongst themselves that. When it came to the child abuse and unfit to practice charges, they said there's nothing here.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, maybe to refute something that Ann said about they don't want you talking about 10-year-olds getting abortions at all, they were pretty clear that you can use hypothetical situations. You can still use your expertise as a physician to go and talk about how this may or may not harm, you know, the general population of Indiana. But it's when you go to a newspaper outlet, and I think one of the board members said how many 10-year-old pregnant people travel from Ohio. I think that's kind of the basis of this
more
violation.
Yeah, it was the totality of the information that she shared that they right. felt had crossed the line. In terms of, again, what this says to physicians across Indiana, we heard from a couple of colleagues of Dr. Bernard's last night who said, yeah, it makes them think twice about practicing in Indiana. But the board also kind of stressed, especially the board president, John Strobel, kind of stressed this is a unique case. This we probably won't use this much as precedent because I'm not even sure we'll see a case like this come up again. How much will that affect the practice of medicine in Indiana?
I think it still will have an impact. I can't help but think about this from a journalism lens. You know, we do interview physicians and other medical experts, and we do like to get specifics when possible. Everybody knows that, you know, helps better tell the story. So I do think that could limit that a little bit. But to your point, yes, this was a unique situation and probably far more political than any other case, for the most part, that this board sees.
And
so you can't ignore the politics behind it.
It wouldn't have been if Rokita hadn't jumped on this with both feet and both hands.
To the point, you can't ignore the politics of this. This isn't happening in a vacuum. So when we talk about the impact of physicians in Indiana, particularly in this area, in obstetrics, in abortion care and reproductive care, we heard the results of IU Health surveying its medical students last year during the abortion ban debate, and 80% of them said the fact that Indiana was debating that ban was going to have an impact on whether or not they practiced medicine in Indiana, in a state in which a third of counties don't have a hospital or pregnancy center already. To that end, even though she got off with just a letter of reprimand and this fine, does that make it more difficult for Indiana to attract and retain young talent in the medical field?
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, I think the words we all think of when we come to this is a chilling effect, you know. And this case could still be appealed to a judge. It's still out there. But whether it's unique or not, it is a precedent. And if I'm a doctor, I'm not going to tell anyone anything. I mean, even during the discussion amongst the board, there were comments from doctors who said, you know, hey, we talk about our cases all the time in the lounge. Like, are we breaking, you know, HIPAA? And, you know, there are questions about even amongst the board themselves when they talk about a case. Are we identifying people just by talking about the ideas of a case? So, I mean, there is a larger discussion to be had. And I do think maybe the legislature might wade into a few parts of the law, especially on the child abuse reporting side, about maybe to clarify specifically who to report to and what counts as immediately, that kind of stuff.
A new national report, speaking of child abuse, on children's interactions with child welfare agencies reveals that Indiana kids are at risk of maltreatment investigations, confirmed maltreatment, and foster care placement more than most, if not all, of their peers around the country. The report's details were outlined in a recent story by the Indiana Capital Chronicle. About 4 out of 5 black Indiana children will be part of a maltreatment investigation by DCS during childhood, according to new research. No other group is at greater risk in the entire country. The Capital Chronicle reports Indiana is one of only 3 states in which there's at least a 50% chance of a maltreatment investigation during childhood for all children. In the story, the Department of Child Services noted that in the last 5 years, the rate of entry into care for black Hoosier kids decreased by 46%. The national study also reveals that Indiana children are second highest in the country for risk of confirmed maltreatment. Chris Mitchum, just how shocking are these numbers?
Very shocking, and I would say more heartbreaking than anything, honestly. I think, you know, if there was a silver bullet that we could use to fix this, obviously we would have done it yesterday. And I think a lot of the solutions being thrown around of, okay, let's just put more resources to DCS. You could have all of the agents pay them as much as you want, that's not going to keep children from falling into these predicaments in the first place, right? And I think SED can say the same can go for a lot of the welfare programs that you can see being proposed to maybe help that. Will it help? Yeah, maybe. But I think this is way more than a legislature issue. I think you have to get to the root of the cause, you know, particularly in the Black community. You know, when you see 70% of babies around the country who are born into wedlock, that's not a good indicator. That's not a good start for what is considered, you know, a healthy family unit going forward to prevent more of these. So I think it's way more than a legislature, any law, any more resources towards DCS. It's really something that I think local communities have to tackle, whether that be organizations, faith leaders, to kind of come and kind of start improving this culture.
Yeah, is that the biggest thing that rocks you back when you read these numbers? Obviously, the numbers themselves are just stunning.
No, it's not.
But is the biggest problem is it doesn't feel like there's one thing we can be doing here.
I don't think there's any reason to think that Black children in Indiana are in any different situation than in many of the sister states. And the fact that we have this many interventions doesn't, it seems to me, talk about the health of the family unit. It talks about whether or not there's racism in the process, in my mind. Because we seem to be singling out African-American children. And there are no statistics of which I'm aware that somehow the children in this state that are African-American are worse off than they are in Illinois or Ohio. And yet our numbers are terrible, which tells me that part of the problem is with DCS. And it's not simply pay, and it's not simply resources. It's attitudinal. And that is really frightening.
I want to ask one thing also that caught my attention about this. And this does go a little bit more to DCS policy, because this has been a very clear policy from them for a while. You have all these terrible numbers about maltreatment investigations, confirmed maltreatment, foster care placement, and yet, you know, we're among the worst in the country in that. And yet, we are in the lower segment of the country for times when we terminate the parent-child relationship. And that's been a DCS policy for a while now, of reunification, if
above
at all.
All.
Yeah, kind of above all. Is that a policy that needs to be revisited?
Yeah, I mean, they obviously err completely on the side of keeping the family together. And you know, in theory, that's great. But when you start reading some of these heartbreaking case reports, you know, so every year we get a child abuse, neglect, death report, and they kind of outline the cases, and you're just like, oh, my God, how is that kid possibly still in that situation? And so, but I do agree that there is a bit of a concern about, yeah, obviously we have pockets of poverty in the state. We have, but I don't think our state is that much different from all the other states to show that huge disparity. So I do know that DCS pointed out some improvement in recent years. This report goes up
to 2019, yep. And there has been a significant drop in the
yes.
number of black kids in care at DCS in the last 3 years.
Yeah, so they're trying to work at it. But, you know, this would probably be an issue that lawmakers should maybe summer study committees aren't my favorite thing in the world. But this is a
this
good
is
example
sort
of one
works.
Where we need to dig into why.
And I want to ask about that because I would say over the last decade or so, one of the fiercest advocates for a real the legislature playing a real watchdog role over DCS was now Congresswoman Erin Houchin. And since she has left the General Assembly, I haven't seen on the Republican side that same like sort of voice loudly saying, hey, we need to be watching out for this agency. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but certainly not out front the way Erin Houchin was. Is that going to be a problem for when the agency might need a little bit more oversight?
Yeah, I'm sure someone will step up eventually, but I do think that is a loss. I'm interested. The report also makes me wonder, there's this whole idea of, are you just taking away children because, you know, the parents are in poverty? Like, how much of this is due to poverty versus actual neglect? And so I think that's one question I have when looking at the report is, are we just, you know, being too overeager on that? Again, things that a summer study committee could dig into to figure out. But, yeah, I don't know that there is a voice in the State House that has been super focused on this issue since Senator Houchin left.
Yeah, and to your point, I know there was briefly talks of a potential pilot program about potentially privatizing certain DCS attorneys. And whether you like it or not, basically the response from legislators was, what do we have to lose? I mean, the state that it's in now, let's give it a shot. And again, going back to the summer study committee, that's maybe something I'm sure that could probably be brought up next session and will probably be worth more conversation.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, does the Indiana Department of Child Services do a good job? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, will Governor Eric Holcomb's endorsement in the gubernatorial race make an impact? Just 34% of you say yes, 66% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The state would have greater control over downtown Indianapolis under a plan recently proposed by Republican gubernatorial candidate Eric Doden. Doden's plan would give the state sole authority over infrastructure in Miles Square, downtown Indianapolis. He would also direct the Indiana State Police to have a greater presence in high crime areas of Marion County, and he would support the creation of a prosecutor review board that could appoint special prosecutors in an effort to, as Doden says, address rogue prosecutors who don't enforce the law. That last idea was proposed and rejected during the 2023 legislative session. Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett recently announced an outreach initiative to connect with the homeless population in downtown, and state lawmakers recently gave Indianapolis the ability to tax property owners in Miles Square to pay for improvements, including a low-barrier homeless shelter, cleanliness programs, and safety initiatives. Caitlin Lang, does Doden's plan make sense to you?
That will be up to the voters, but it does leave me with some questions. For instance, state police, you know, they already have lower numbers in the recruiting classes. Do they have enough bandwidth to actually step up enforcement in the Miles Square?
But, and that part of the plan wasn't just Miles Square. That was anywhere in the county that they decided is a high crime area.
True. So, yeah, do you have enough, when you already have these small recruiting classes, do you have enough police officers for that? Will it make a difference having the state control the infrastructure money instead of the city? You know, that seems like just a... Who's controlling the money doesn't seem like it would make a huge difference on that front. And then the prosecutor piece, lawmakers have tried to pass this bill this year, similar versions in years past, and have not succeeded. So I guess my question for him is how would you actually convince them to get that done this year? Which I understand, you know, obviously this is just a blueprint for his vision, so there's details that aren't entirely worked out yet, but there are still lots of questions I would have about the plan.
I appreciate any candidate who comes out with policy ideas
as
something to talk about. But what's been fascinating to me here is that Doden released this plan, I think, a couple weeks ago, but over the last week has really been harping on this in attacking Mayor Joe Hogsett, which leads me to wonder, is Eric Doden running for governor or the mayor of Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think I sent that note to a few friends, too. I mean, I get it. On one hand, Eric Doden is doing what he needs to do to get his name out there, right?
It's great for him.
It's free media. And it has the added bonus of trying to hurt a Democratic candidate that, you know, Republicans want to take the capital city. So it's, you know, it's like a twofer, right? Yeah. But I do think it could have been paired, at least, with a slightly additional thing of saying how he would help the rest of the state on public safety issues, because Indianapolis is not the only, you know, city in the state that has some issues like this.
And Indianapolis, Joe Hogsett has stepped up. He's raised the starting pay to bring in more police. He's talking about what we need to do with gun control in order to deal with crime in any major city.
By the way, speaking of things, I'm wondering how he convinces the General Assembly of that.
Okay, but you can't, on the one hand, be all for or all against crime, on the one hand, and then say everybody ought to be issued an AK-47. It makes absolutely no sense, but that's the Republican position.
I mean, the fact that Joe Hogsett continues to declare that downtown is as the safest part of Indianapolis. Okay, you may have a point that it's the safest part, but just because it's the safest part of an area that is overall bad, it doesn't make it safe.
I don't think our city is bad. You may think that.
Yeah.
And certainly Shreve thinks that, but I don't.
The crime rate on a record to, again, achieve a record high number of violent crimes and homicide.
That was two months when he had his ad.
The trends literally say if it continues to be a trend, it will be, again, another record level at the end of this year.
Like it is
in Indianapolis.
Everywhere where you have guns, because the Republicans issue.
I want to ask this to you, which is, Doden's certainly getting his name out there, and as Nikki pointed out, maybe dinging a Democrat who's up for re-election this year in the city. But Does the average Republican primary voter in anywhere that isn't Indianapolis or maybe the donut counties care about a governor's plan for downtown Indianapolis?
I think he's trying to make it so they do care because he keeps referring to downtown Indianapolis as the economic heartbeat of
Indiana.
Which
is Indiana. Absolutely.
That's
Indianapolis
where your conventions
is the driver
are,
of Indiana.
Your sports are, and they will, you know, slowly spread. I know a big part of Doden's campaign in general is he thinks we're abandoning these smaller towns around Indiana. We need
to go in.
We need to directly invest in those.
They've abandoned them. They've abandoned them years ago.
I just want to say one thing. I do like that he actually has policy proposals.
Yes.
And he's had them for more than a year. Yep. We haven't heard any policy proposals from any of the other candidates.
Yep. Hobson.
No, gubernatorial.
Okay.
No, I agree with that. Hoosiers could see savings on drug prices under legislation set to take effect this summer. WFYI's Farah Yousri reports the bill aims to provide more transparency and accountability within the drug pricing world.
Senate Bill 8 would require pharmacy benefit managers to submit reports every 6 months to show how much they make from working as the middleman between pharmacies and insurance companies. It would also require insurers to pass on most of the drug discounts or rebates they receive to consumers. George Huntley of the Diabetes Patient Advocacy Coalition says this is a positive step.
A Hoosier who is on the exchanges buying their health insurance from the exchanges, their drug costs will drop and on average cut in half if they're buying a branded drug on the exchange.
But some drug pricing experts worry the language in the bill has been watered down and would allow PBMs and insurers to find ways to work around the system.
Nikki, lawmakers have been working on this bill for years, longer than a lot of these healthcare bills. Did they finally hit the sweet spot?
I mean, it depends what you consider to be success. They passed a bill that, you know, tries to get at pharmacy benefit managers. There's definitely some more transparency in the bill, which is never a bad thing. Do I think they actually have something that's probably going to directly cause savings for Hoosiers? Probably not. Having said that, I'm not sure there is a way for them to do that aside from draconian sort of government takeovers.
To that point, you know, Farah mentioned it in the piece that there are concerns that this bill has been watered down, which is the same thing we heard about almost every health care bill this session that tried to get the idea of costs and cost savings. So to that point, like, are we just not going far enough, or is there a place where we can go far enough?
I think the important thing to keep in mind is this was one bill of multiple. So at least there are multiple ideas out there that are attempting to lower healthcare costs, which is probably better than previous years, I guess. So that is something that we can say. But I think it really is hard when you have so many powerful industries in the sector. You have the hospitals, you have the pharmaceuticals, you have the healthcare insurance companies.
Just legislation in general.
It's just, and just the process in general. It's just really hard to break through all that and the massive amount of money that these groups spend on lobbying just to get their points across. I mean, at times you don't even know, you know, there was doubt cast on the RAND study, for example.
Yeah,
so we can't even agree on what data to use. So that makes it even harder to find a good solution that would actually work.
Well, it's not like there are any big drug companies in Indiana, but bottom line, are Hoosiers going to see costs? Are Hoosiers going to notice or see cost savings because of this bill?
Yeah, I mean, some of the opposition, mainly came from the Republican side, said this bill is too watered down, and I think a quote that happened on the Senate floor during debate was, this bill is going to help millions and millions of Hoosiers. It's going to help thousands and thousands of Hoosiers, which is still good policy at the end of the day. But back to your point about a sweet spot, I think this is mainly as good as you can get because it wasn't even a few years ago where they were talking about just completely banning PBMs in general. So,
is this, if this doesn't see the kind of savings that some people would like to see, is this the first step to, well, we tried it. We tried doing it the slightly softer way, so now we got to get a little harsher? Or is that ever
requires backbone. And there isn't an awful lot of that in the legislation. The other thing I think that drives this, it's not just the powerful lobbyists, it's the advertising on television. Ask your doctor whether you ought to have X or Y or Z. You'll be able to dance. You'll be able to go out. You'll be able, you know, it's
followed
crazy.
Followed by 45 seconds of side effects.
Right. Very quick side effects.
That's true, but they don't even tell you what it's for.
Could
know?
Be fatal.
But you're supposed to get it.
Finally, it's that special time of year in Indiana, the running of the Indianapolis 500. As always, we ask our panelists to pick a winner for the race. Chris Mitchum, we will start with you. Who's going to?
Don't overthink it. Pick the fastest car. Pick the Vegas backer. I'm going with Palou.
A record time.
Right. I'm going with the Hoosier. I want Tony Kanaan.
Tony Kanaan.
Okay, I've never gotten this right, so I'm going for the storyline. Graham Rahal all the way.
Yes, there I love go. That. Coming in late to the race after the crash. Yeah. I like that.
That would be a good choice.
I don't follow it at all, so my guess is going to be for the woman driver in the field.
I like that.
Have
I
to
like
go
that.
With her.
I did like, I asked somebody who also doesn't know anything about racing, and I said, pick a driver, and she said, Adam Driver. Who's the
a good answer?
But I'm going with I like Scott Dixon for this one. Had the pole position last year, I think. Maybe this is the year he finally finishes the race. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Chris Mitchum, Caitlin Lang of State Affairs Indiana, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at WFYI.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.